Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, an entrepreneurial support organization and coworking community with locations in Valley Junction and downtown Des Moines. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Work better. Work together.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. 1988 was the year that Tim Fay edited and published his first Wapsipinicon Almanac. It's a journal of fiction, nonfiction, essays, poetry, reviews, and other stuff, too. Tim, the proprietor of Route 3 Press in rural Anamosa, prints the almanac on his antique printing press. It's distributed in print around the region, and issue number 25 is in bookstores, co-ops, and a few other places right now. And this is it. This is the last one. This hour, I'll talk with publisher Tim Fay and a number of this year's contributors. We also want to hear from you. If you're a regular reader of the Almanac, we'd love to hear what it means to you. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Tim Fay is here. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Charity.
Welcome back to the show.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So this is it, your last issue of the Wapsipinicon Almanac. What made you decide that this was time?
Well, I thought 25 issues would be a good time to cut it off, and I'm certainly no spring chicken. And I want to go out on top. It's been a good run, and I'm still enthusiastic about it. And I thought this would just be a good time to rein it in.
Well, we talked about it being the last issue when you were here last year. Once people found out that this was going to be the last issue of the Wapsipinicon Almanac, did you find yourself inundated with contributions even more than usual?
Not so much, but I'm real happy with this last issue because I have some good new young talent, but I also was able to reel in work from folks I've published over the years and certain artists and great regulars who've been with me from the beginning.
How did knowing it was your last one change the process for you this year?
It didn't really. I pretty much went through the same efforts. I started typesetting last January, typeset all summer, and things got intense in the fall, as usual. And actually, I don't feel that much of a change yet because I'm still doing the same things. I'm planning and scheduling readings and fighting the weather for these readings. And I'm binding books and distributing them and seeing some of the same great folks in venues and dealing with some of the same fine people, like the group we have assembled here this morning.
Right, and you're going to be doing a reading at Prairie Lights Bookstore tomorrow
night.
Correct,
tomorrow night. And it's going to be cold. I'm hoping some of the faithful will turn out. But remember, as my Swedish daughter-in-law says, there's no bad weather. It's just bad clothing.
I don't know about that today. I'm not going to subscribe to that philosophy. But usually you come in and we do a show just about once a year. And usually we go out to the bookstore and buy a copy of the Almanac. And it's an easy thing to do. This year, I went to New Pioneer Co-op and they didn't have it in. I went to Prairie Lights Bookstore and I got their very last copy, although I'm sure you're replenishing that stock. Is the Almanac selling a lot faster this year than usual?
It's selling very quickly, and I'm delighted. I think that must have something to do with that wonderful cover my cohort Will Thompson, who's sitting next to me, put together.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful cover, although I think it probably has a lot to do with the fact that this is the final edition of the Almanac. Does that feel a little bittersweet that it's selling so quickly?
Feels pretty good.
Good.
It's nice to go out with a bang.
So I want to go back in time. We've talked about it on the show before, but let's go back to 1988. Starting your own publication was something that you had been dreaming about for a long time, right?
Right. I always wanted to do something like that. I did a lot of job printing around Anamosa, which was fine. I'm still doing that. But I always wanted to publish my own kind of a journal.
And where did the letterpress equipment that you use, where did that originally come from?
That came from many places in Iowa. When I began collecting equipment in the mid to late 70s, all of this equipment, all of this type of material was being scrapped. It was going to China or Mexico or the Philippines. And the old printers were still around. Sadly, most of them are gone now. But I was able to pick up so much equipment for just hauling it away or for scrap price. And I was always glad for that. But the press that I print the almanac on came from Webster City. The linotype came from Cedar Rapids. The paper cutter came from Wyoming, Iowa. I had type from Ossian, Iowa. You name it, all over the state, this place, the material was available.
When did you fall in love with this kind of printing? Because clearly you've been very dedicated to it.
Well, when I was at the University of Montana, my last 2 years, finishing up a journalism degree, I was one of the editors of the Student Daily, and we worked with the old letterpress guys in the basement of the journalism building, and I was around the material. And my uncle from Anamosa was a letterpress printer for many years, doing it the old way in town with the weekly newspaper, and I heard his stories over the years growing up. And I was fortunate enough as a young man to work a little bit with Bonnie O'Connell, who had a wonderful shop near Lisbon, Iowa. She was the proprietress of the Penumbra Press, and I did a little work with her and sort of got the smell of ink in my veins and carried on from there. Knew I wanted to be in business for myself, and I started collecting equipment and printed for about 10 years, then launched the Almanac in 1988 during that very dry, drought-ridden year.
The Almanac has been so beloved over the years. It's really developed a loyal following, and I sense that there's been more demand than you've even really been able to meet for the Almanac. Has there been pressure to take it online or make a mass market printing?
There's been pressure to take it online, but somehow that just didn't feel right. So I never went that route. I think there are people who still like to hold something in their hands, turn the pages, and enjoy it that way. And I think that's been valid. And in terms of putting out 25,000 of these every year, anybody who thinks that can come and help me collate and sew books and do all that and glue on covers and trim and drive them around in my car. But this run, I think, is about right.
How many did you print this year?
1,600.
1,600. And do you know how many are left?
I think I'm down to about 300 now, which is pretty phenomenal for this time of year. Not to blow my own horn, but they are really moving.
Yeah, absolutely. So in thinking about saying goodbye, have you had anybody come to you and say, hey, I'd like to take this over?
No. I think I've made it clear through the grapevine that I birthed this and I should bury it, which I think's appropriate. Besides, somebody who came along and took it over would probably do a better job, and you know, that might be painful and embarrassing.
So what did you want to say? I know you wrote a letter at the end of this year's Almanac saying goodbye, sharing just a few final thoughts and making a very nice plug for public broadcasting in your state of Iowa as well. Thank you very much for that. But what do you want to leave people with?
Just thank you, mostly. I mean, I was a small town printer, still am, and just that I've been very, very lucky. I've met so many wonderful people over the years and made a lot of friends through this connection, and just thanking my good luck.
Well, you are retiring the Almanac, but you are not retiring yourself.
Oh, no. I want to take on smaller projects, letterpress chapbooks. Yeah. I've done, I think, 3 or 4 for the great Mary Swander, and I hope to do more for her. And there's this notion of something called fine printing with exquisite paper and careful typesetting and all that. And this gentleman sitting next to me is quite a woodcut artist. I really love woodcuts. I hope to reproduce some of those someday. And we've always talked about collaborating on a project. And if he doesn't move back to North Carolina, I hope that'll happen sometime.
Well, let's bring Will Thompson into the conversation. Will, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Charity.
And let's talk about this cover art this year. When I picked up this copy of the Wapsipinic and Almanac, it's a striking color cover. It's really beautiful. It's a rural scene. There's a bridge in the background, a fox in the foreground, an old-fashioned pickup truck, and it's also full color. I thought, that doesn't quite look like the Wapsipinic and Almanac that I'm used to. Tell me a little bit about this cover.
Well, Tim and I, we have a tradition of wrestling over the covers whenever we work on them. I don't know that there's too much to explain.
You know what? I'm going to turn Kelly's mic toward you.
Okay. Now.
All right. So tell me about the cover.
Well, I've worked with Tim. This is the seventh cover that I've done for the Almanac over the years. So we have quite a track record of wrestling over the covers, and most of them have been designed for letterpress printing and specifically for the antique equipment that he has. So registration is an issue, color is an issue, how many colors and so forth. And I guess that I just came up with five or six ideas and we knocked them around and kind of wormed our way down to the one that you see there, and it just kind of turned out that it would look so much richer and more beautiful if we just went full color on it, and that's a little complicated on antique equipment.
Yeah, that's not just complicated, Tim. This would have been impossible on the antique equipment, right? Okay.
Yes, yes.
All right. So was that a struggle for you to decide to do such a different cover on your last Wapsipinic and Almanac?
It was, but when I saw how nice it was, I thought, let's do it.
It is really, really beautiful. And Will, how you've mentioned you've done, what, seven covers over the years?
Yeah.
And you've done some art for inside the Almanac as well.
Right.
When did you first start working with Tim?
Well, almost immediately after I met him, we kind of came together over the subject of letterpress and fine printing. I was a member of a book club here at the university that the Center for the Book sponsored, and my main interest is in illustration. I'm an illustrator. And illustrators tell stories.
Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about the Wapsipinic and Almanac, issue number 25 this hour, the final edition of the Wapsipinic and Almanac. Tim Fay, publisher and editor of the Almanac, is here, along with Will Thompson, the artist behind this year's cover art, and we'll talk to other contributors in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, an entrepreneurial support organization and coworking community with locations in Valley Junction and downtown Des Moines. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Work better. Work together.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the Wapsipinic and Almanac, which has just been published at issue number 25. This is the final Wapsipinic and Almanac. The first one was published back in 1988. Tim Fay, publisher and editor of the Wapsipinic and Almanac, is here with me now. And for people who aren't familiar with the publication, it's a journal full of fiction, nonfiction, essays, reviews, art, poetry, other surprising things as well. It's all printed on antique letterpress equipment, and it is distributed in print around the region, printed almost annually since 1988. Like I mentioned, this is issue number 25. So, Tim, you don't take that almanac idea overly seriously, right?
Right.
All right. And Will Thompson is here, the artist behind this year's cover art. And Will, before I let you go, what appealed to you about the Wapsipinic and Almanac?
Well, the character, this unique perspective that Tim brings to, it's just style, it's character, it's flow with the traditional regional idea that Tim put forth in the Almanac from the very beginning, and I think he's held on to. I enjoy the modest homespun basic idea, and its regionalist touch is not just literary or cultural, it's artistic. It's like being able to open the minds of the regionalist painters, you know, of the 20s and the 30s, that sort of thing. And I like telling stories through illustration, and the the Almanac allowed me to contribute to it in that fashion, to try to develop cover ideas that meshed with its character.
What are your thoughts about this being the final edition?
Well, I'm sad to see it leaving the scene, but I know I'm going to be working with Tim in the future on other projects, and so I see that as an opportunity as well. I think that the Almanac's made a wonderful contribution to life in Iowa, as I've sort of become a semi-native over the last 35 years. I just think I think it's a wonderful thing, and I'm not ruling it out. I think Tim will go along for 3 or 4 years and then go, oh, damn it, I'm going to do one more.
All right. Well, Will Thompson, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Charity.
Will Thompson, the artist behind this year's cover art on the Wapsipinicon Almanac. And Tim, I don't know if Will's prognostication will come to pass or not, but every time you do publish the Almanac, you start us off with a little bit of talk of the township and share some of your thoughts from throughout the year. And would you read a little bit of that for us?
I'd be delighted. This is a little snippet that I think needs reading today, because what are we talking, 20 below zero tonight?
Yes.
And the wind is howling and so on and so forth. Let's think about spring. People rave over the sights and smells of an Iowa springtime. But highest on my list of delights for that fine time of year is the glorious sound of the first low whine of spring peepers and chorus frogs. I especially welcomed that heavenly melody with open arms during this, the year of the endless winter. I was talking about 2018 here. Piles of snow, fringes of snow, and snow remnants through April began to resemble annoying party guests in no hurry to depart. I've traditionally snickered at the snowbird mentality, but our collective April ordeal caused me to reassess. Even a tiny pickup topper equipped with a microwave and an AM radio parked in an Alabama Walmart parking lot started sounding good. How lovely those warming chimes from the little amphibians. They hang out in those damp places, marshes, ditches, shallow pools, and when those first mild smile days magically ease into the picture, the males vocalize in near-perfect harmony that they are more than ready to launch into the rites of spring. Returning songbird tunes strike a special chord, too, but that first echo from our township mud pools wins the prize.
Tim Fay reading from the Talk of the Township, giving us a little bit of hope on this very, very cold January day. Was it different for you to write Talk of the Township this year, again, knowing that it was your last?
Not really, because I pretty much left the goodbye thing out of the Talk of the Township and made reference to it to the back of the magazine, where I did write a little so long, see you later column.
And does this feel like it's freeing you? I mean, this has been such an enormous amount of work in addition to being a real passion project. Does this, when you think about the coming year, do you feel a certain lightness?
Yeah, and there'll be question marks in my future, and I think about that, and it's kind of a challenge. Looking forward to it.
I know you have a poem you want to read for us, too.
Right, and this is a tribute to my dear friend Floyd Pierce, who's helped me so much over the years with the Almanac. Floyd is a World War II vet, former mayor of Cumberland, Iowa. He's a printer and a bookbinder and a real character. And I published this poem of Floyd's in my last issue. This is called Weatherman by Floyd Pierce from Cumberland, Iowa. When I grow old and wise, I shall buy a barometer and check daily to see its rise and fall. And I will read a book on meteorology to find what it means to rise and fall. I'll become as alert as a bird to wind direction and velocity, sensitive to temperature and humidity. I'll learn to compute dew point, and I'll memorize the names of cloud shapes. I'll keep a book where I'll enter my information. On nights, I'll look at the moon dispassionately, and determine the clarity of the sky. And the slice of moon, I'll discern at a glance whether it's new or old. I may even become familiar with the names and locations of a few stars and planets and constellations. I'll need to review the placement of land masses and oceans, the Earth's angle from the sun, rotation, orbit. When I grow old, I want to learn all about the weather. As I enter my daily accounts of sunshine and storm, I may develop a plausible notion what will happen tomorrow, and perhaps even accept that there is not one thing I can do about it.
Tim Fay reading a poem by Floyd Pierce from the most recent Wapsipinicon Almanac. And I want to bring Kelly Donham into the conversation now. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Charity.
And you published an essay this year called Christmas Found on a Trailways Bus. And why don't you start us off with a little bit of reading from that?
I will. Returning to Iowa City from Chicago on the bus, I noticed a man sitting across the aisle from us, seated alone. He was a small man, maybe 5 feet, six at best, 140 pounds at the most. He looked to be in his mid-60s. He wore a white straw cowboy hat, a white denim jacket, and blue jeans. His cowboy boots were shined, as were the silver tips. He carried a rolled-up blanket tied with a leather thong on either end with a slack in the line so that it could be carried over his shoulder. Seeing it recalled me the saddle rolls of cowboys in the old Western movies. This was the extent of his luggage. From his looks and dress, I surmised he was from the Mexican cattle country of the state of Sonora. And I found myself wondering, why was he here? How did he get here amongst the denizens of the many Americans by choice or necessity who cannot afford more comfortable and more private travel? Was he an immigrant? Was he an illegal immigrant? I had to caution myself as I was starting to profile this little man and perhaps develop a negative perspective about him. Our first stop was in Naperville, where we paused for a few minutes, and then we were back on the road again, westbound on I-80. And my wife and I had settled back and relaxed to the humming of the tires on the pavement, contemplating a nap. But, however, I could not get settled as I noticed the small little man across the aisle begin to fidget, and he turned to me and gave me a nervous smile, flashing two gold front teeth, and he asked, "Donde está Naperville?" Well, it was obvious he could not speak English. Well, I did not understand what he was asking, but barely penetrating the cobwebs of my neglected college Spanish, I replied, "Pasamos Naperville, 50 millas de grueso," and we passed Naperville 50 miles ago. He smiled, disintegrated to sadness and contorted with fear and concerned by his changed effect, and I asked, "Como te llamas?" "Me llamas Jesus," he said. And he spoke again, saying something I could not really get this time. And he took out a billfold and pulled out a piece of paper, and on it I saw a phone number and a name, and through my very rusty Spanish back and forth, I understood that he had relatives in Aurora, and he was supposed to get off and meet them at Naperville stop. And of course he could not understand English. He had no idea where we had stopped at Naperville and then moved on. Well, he showed me his ticket to Naperville, and I looked at the phone number, and it was an Illinois number for the Aurora area. He had no phone, and so I called the number with my cell phone. No answer. I suspected that number I called was a landline for his relatives, and they were probably now at the Naperville bus station waiting for their husband, grandfather, uncle, brother, or... I approached the bus driver and explained what apparently had happened, and he looked back at me, sad and frightened. And the other passengers were now aware of the drama unfolding. The driver turned his eyes back to the road and shook his head, stared straight forward, and continued westward. And after a few minutes, the driver pulled out his cell phone, and he motioned me to go sit down in my seat. But moments later, the driver got off his phone, and he called me back up front, and he explained that he had arranged a rendezvous with a bus coming down from the north, bound for Chicago, and that bus, with a deviation, would meet our bus in Dixon, Illinois, and they would deviate to Naperville on their way and take Jesus back to where he was supposed to meet his people. Our bus and the rescue bus would each suffer up to at least an hour delay. And I went back to Jesus and explained as best I could and what was going to happen. And his expression changed from one of fear and sadness to a broad, gold-toothed smile. The bus driver turned into the exit ramp for Dixon and stopped at a gas station. And on the loudspeaker, he explained that we would have at least an hour delay. And the driver didn't have to explain the delay. The passenger just figured it out. And they knew the delay was for the sake of Jesus. Nobody got upset. Everyone just settled back. Some got off the bus and went inside to get something to eat. And I looked at the old man and asked, ¿Tienes hombre? And he responded, un poco. I went inside and brought him an egg salad sandwich and a bottle of milk, which he consumed con mucho gusto. And soon the driver called the passengers back to the bus, and the old man, clutching the remains of his milk and sandwich, slung his bedroll over his shoulder and walked out of the bus as the others got on. The rendezvous bus had arrived. As we pulled away, I looked back to see the little man standing with his bedroll strapped over his shoulder, ready to board the eastbound bus. And as he tipped his white cowboy hat, a broad grin spread across his face, and he was going to go see his family with a little support from 50 friends and a special bus driver. The gift here was that the driver demonstrated sympathy for the old man, risking protests from other passengers and rebuke from his bus company boss. The gift also included the 50 passengers who understood they were going to be late because of this one small elderly Mexican traveler to a foreign country with a language he didn't understand. But that delay in time was not as important as seeing him united with his family, and the gift was also to me, as my initial profiling and prejudice, is he an illegal alien, faded to realize he is a human being with immense courage, humbleness, thankfulness, grit, and desire to connect with his relatives. And I assumed he was an immigrant. This led me to thinking that there is something about our current immigration policies, the effort to stop chain migration, for example. That does not consider the human side of the equation, and I wish more people did.
Kelly Donham reading from his essay, Christmas Found on a Trailways Bus. And Kelly, you go on in that essay to share another heartwarming experience on a Greyhound bus or a Trailways bus. And this is a kind of transportation a lot of people work really hard to avoid partaking of. Mm-hmm. Are you a dedicated bus rider?
I sure am.
Why?
It's because I learn lessons. People fascinate me. And if you lock yourself into traveling on a plane wherever you go, people just look straight ahead and you learn nothing. But on a bus, you learn the breadth of humanity, if you will. And I learn lessons all the time when we take the bus.
It's such a slow kind of transportation in this world where we're always in such a big hurry.
Exactly, exactly. And so a lot of people think that they got to be from point A to point B because they're so important or what they do is important that they, you know, their whole personality changes.
Do you find that there's often a different attitude on the buses? Because, I mean, obviously people expect delays. And anybody who's ever traveled on a bus knows that a lot of things seem to get in the way of getting to your destination on time.
Exactly. Exactly. I think one of the things is, as the story goes on, it was the issue again of a bus breakdown and the fact that the people didn't get upset. You know, they just started singing Christmas carols.
What was your first connection with the Wapsipinicon Almanac? Do you remember?
Oh, probably many years ago. My wife was the director of the library at Cornell College, and so brought my attention to that. And then speaking with the current director, they have a series. I don't know if they have all of the 25 copies, but I want to make sure that if they want to have all of the copies there at that library, I'm going to talk to Tim and see if we can't make that happen.
I'm sure there are a few people with full collections. What do you think the Almanac has done for Iowa, done for writers and readers in the state?
Well, I speak for myself. I've been writing short stories for Christmas presents for the last 25 years or so. And for myself and perhaps many others, it provides an expansion of the thoughts and that we have that we can share with other people. So it provides that kind of an experience and something more of a down-home kind of an experience, which I really like.
So an opportunity for people who may not I mean, there are certainly people who are professional writers who published in the Wapsipinicon Almanac, but you feel like it's an opportunity for more people to have their voices heard?
Absolutely. I mean, most of my writing has been professional scientific writing and so on and so forth, but this is a different kind of writing that gets us back to more of a humanistic point of view.
Yeah, and what does it feel like to be a part of the last issue?
Well, special. Yeah.
Almost special. Like riding a bus on Christmas.
Really. It's really that special. So I really want to thank Tim for all of the work that he's done in this regard over so many years.
Well, we are going to take a short break. But Kelly Donham, thank you so much for reading and for talking with me today.
Thank you very much.
Kelly Donham published an essay called Christmas Found on a Trailways Bus in this year's edition of the Wapsipinicon Almanac, issue number 25, the final edition of the Wapsipinicon Almanac. Publisher and editor Tim Fay is still here with us as well, and there will be a reading at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City tomorrow night at 7 p.m. with a collection of contributors to this year's almanac. And we'll continue our conversation in a moment. You're welcome to join us, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the final edition of the Wapsipinicon Almanac, issue number 25, in bookstores and other kinds of stores right now, selling out fast this year. Tim Fay is here with me, publisher and editor of the Wapsipinicon Almanac. There will be a reading at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City tomorrow night at 7 p.m. with a collection of contributors. And in just a moment, I'm going to talk with J. Harley McElrath, one of the contributors this year. And with me right now is Dave Layton. Hello, Dave.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Dave shares his story, A Real Lone Wolf, in the From the Land section of this year's almanac. Dave, would you read a little bit from that for us?
Okay. Just a little. This is really just a walk in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we tended to walk in different types of places.
Yeah, and you're walking along the Mississippi River?
Yes. And so after a little description of where we're walking, we decided to leave the tracks and wander down into the woods. We were soon walking past old fire pits. Wouldn't it be fun to build a fire and just sit around and talk? Sharon asked. Can I back up a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
Sharon and her husband Jim are walking with me. Something really cool about this Wapsie Almanac was she just had a major health crisis, and at the time, Tim called me and said, do you still have that story? And I said, yeah. And so she's going to get a copy of this.
Oh, nice. That's wonderful.
Sharon asked, wouldn't it be fun to build a fire and just sit around and talk? We can't do that, I joked. We don't have any 40-ouncers with us. I don't understand, she said. Well, look around, I said, pointing to large 40-ounce empty beer bottles laying around most of the fire pits. We are going to build a fire. We'll need our party materials, too. Looks like that's standard protocol here. We made a few more comments about people who would litter such nice woods, and then I said, well, all kinds come to a place like this. We walked for a bit in silence after that. After we walked a quarter mile into the woods, Sharon asked, do you smell smoke? I caught a whiff of it, and then it disappeared. After we walked a little bit further, Jim pointed and said, well, there's your fire over there. In another moment, a man standing by the fire waved to us, inviting us over. Well, there you go, Sharon, a ready-made campfire, I said. Oh, you know him? She asked. Oh, no, but he looks hospitable enough, and his fire is inviting, I replied. We all agreed about that, so we walked over and met him. He had fairly long hair and an angular sort of face. He wasn't especially tall, but he had the kind of lean, sprawling body you find on someone who spends a lot of time on his feet. He wore a jean jacket, hooded sweatshirt, and cotton gloves with open fingers. He seemed comfortable in the 30-degree weather, and later he mentioned that he liked the temperature. He really was hospitable when he said, how you doing? Come on, join my fire if you want. I'm just getting my radio tuned in. It's kind of hard to tune down here. While he was fiddling around with the little plastic boombox, I glanced around and saw that he had three 40-ouncers, but just one of them was empty. He also had a pellet pistol and a .22 rifle sitting next to his radio on a log. Sharon got a little startled look on her face when she saw the guns, but she relaxed a little when our host noticed that Jim had a sniffle and pulled a paper towel out of his pack for Jim to use. As he did that, he said, "I always come out here prepared." Later, Sharon admitted that, indeed, a scary scenario briefly passed through her mind when she first saw the weapons. Still, she was the one who got him talking.
That is my guest, Dave Layton, sharing part of his story, A Real Lone Wolf. It's in the From the Land section in this year's Wapsipinicon Almanac. And it's interesting, two of the stories that we've shared today are about first impressions and rethinking first impressions. Tim, is that something that really appeals to you, or is that just a coincidence this year?
Just a coincidence, I think. I need to point out this gentleman's reading about an incident near Clinton, Iowa, so we're situated here.
I wanted to keep that a secret.
Too late.
And you can call him Dave, but everybody knows this fellow is Bingo.
That was a real secret.
And I've never had the chance. I mean, we've played music together. This guy's in, what, about four bands or something. Where did you get the name Bingo?
That's a long story, but it all boils down to a high school gravel road tour with some 40-ouncers.
Okay. Enough said.
All right. I get my microphone back now, Tim. So, Dave, you know, you mentioned that Tim got in touch with you and asked you if you still had this story. When did you first engage with the Almanac? Do you remember?
We were just talking about that, and I think it was 1999. He published a story I wrote, and that was right when I first started writing for the fun of it. I had just finished college and learned how to write, and so I guess I was excited thinking that I was, oh, boy, I'm going to be a writer.
Right. And this, we talked about how the Almanac has given people who may not be professional writers an outlet for their voices. Did this seem like maybe a less frightening, less intimidating way to get your work out there?
I thought he was going to pay me a lot of money.
No, you didn't.
Okay. Actually, since we were already friends from music and stuff, and it was suggested to me, you know, somebody that read one of my, probably Jim or somebody, say, hey, you ought to send that to Tim and see if he wants to publish it. And that was a different story, not
right,
this one.
Right, right. Tim, it strikes me when you went to Dave and said, you know, hey, do you still have that story? That makes me wonder about the community you've built through the Wapsipinicon Almanac over the years. Can you kind of characterize that community for me?
Well, that's one of the great things about this whole endeavor is I have friends in Decorah and Clinton and Des Moines and Ames and Davenport and Cedar Rapids and all over the place, people I wouldn't know if I hadn't have undertaken this. And this gentleman, Bingo, is, you know, top of the list somewhere.
So, Dave, how does it feel that this is the last?
I guess it is like you said, it's an honor to be published in the last one, but I would prefer it wasn't the last one. I think it's an enjoyable thing that's really indigenous and just part of Iowa. And kind of like the prairie, we need as much of that kind of writing as we can keep before it's all gone.
I should add that Dave will be reading with us, I hope, if the weather holds, in Dubuque on February 1st, next Friday night. This wonderful winter, we had a reading scheduled there January 18th, but it got bombed out by the storm.
Sure.
So we've rescheduled. But Bingo will be there.
Is that at River Lights Bookstore?
Bingo will be there with his bass, and we'll have other musicians and a nice cast of readers.
Nice. I have an email here from a longtime admirer, Tim. Just asking, where else will Iowa authors be published without the Wapsipinicon Almanac? What do you think about that?
Good question. There's the North American Review, Cedar Falls, of course. There's the Iowa Review, Iowa City. Those are connected with academic institutions, though. So, gosh, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, this really opens up a gap it feels like, in our literary community in the state.
We shall see.
Well, I'm sure we will keep an eye on that. I'm sure there are people out there thinking, what can I do with this? Well, Dave, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Charity.
Dave Layton, his story, A Real Lone Wolf, is in the From the Land section in the Wapsipinicon Almanac. And J. Harley McElrath is with us on the phone now. He published his story, Breakfast Dishes, in the Almanac this year. Harley, hello.
Hi, Charity.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. And speaking of a while, tell me about your long-term relationship with the Wapsipinicon Almanac. Do you remember when you first encountered it?
I think sometime in the early 90s, when I had a bookstore in Cedar Falls called Bodigan Books, I imagine Tim walked in the door and tried to sell me copies.
Do you remember what your first impression was when you opened up that cover?
Oh, I thought it was wonderful. The whole presentation of it, and the fact that you know, Tim did it all himself on the letterpress, and the sort of material that was in it, there was nothing else like it back then, and there's nothing else like it right now, and when it's gone next year, there will be nothing else like it.
Will you read us a little bit of your story from this year?
Sure. How much time do we have? Do you want the...
I'd say 2 or 3 minutes.
All right. Raymond Rutherford sat at his kitchen table, listening to the rain hit the window pane. His wife sat a cup of coffee on the table in front of him, and he folded his hands around the cup. How did I get so old, he said into the coffee. His wife crossed the room and stood at the sink with her back to him, washing their breakfast dishes. Better than the alternative, she said. I know it, he said, but how did it happen? You know, there's mornings I think I'd better call the boys down to breakfast, or I'll look at the clock and think they'll be home from school. Boy's been gone from home 40 years, she said. I know it, he said. It's just I don't feel it. A dish towel lay spread out on the counter beside the sink, and Raymond watched his wife lay a dripping plate on it to dry. Had them plates a while, he said. 60 years, she said. You remember? He said. I do. Who gave them to us, he said. Medill's? Your Aunt Kate, she said. Medill's, he said. Kate gave us the percolator. Medill's gave us bath towels, she said. Your Aunt Kate gave us the plates. The percolator came from that trucker used to haul corn for you, him and his wife. Might be right, Raymond said. What was his name? Couldn't tell you, his wife said. He came from over by Colfax. That's right, he said. He brought the coffee cup up with both hands and drank, letting the steam warm his face. Raymond wore clean bib overalls, the denim dark blue and the pants legs creased. Beneath his bibs, he wore a blue chambray shirt, clean and pressed. His hair was slicked back from his face, the grooves left by the comb's teeth visible. Thompson, he said. Or Johnson. Who's that? His wife said, stacking another dish on the towel. The trucker, Raymond said. His name was Thompson or Johnson. He seemed like an old man. I'll stop there.
All right. Jay Harley McElrath reading from his story, Breakfast Dishes. And Harley, that rings so true. I think we've all had those conversations, even though we may not be of the same age as the people in your story. Where was your inspiration for the story?
I think, well, I grew up in a family that talked like that, and any conversation at a dinner table was about the past and the people that they'd known and trying to remember things. And, you know, later it gets a little bittersweet. There's been some dementia and memory loss in my family, and it's kind of ironic when you think that the, you know, conversation has always been centered about remembering things. And later it gets to be a struggle.
Right. How much of our identity is wrapped up in that?
Right.
Let's think about the community of writers in Iowa. And Harley, I know as a bookstore owner and a writer yourself, you kind of have a unique insight into that. I was asking Tim to talk about the Wapsipinicon Almanac community, but give me your view. What is this community like, and what does it mean?
I always said that when the Almanac came out and I wasn't in it, I felt like my friends had thrown a party and I wasn't invited. So, you know, and it's interesting because I don't, you know, you don't personally know all the other people in the Almanac, but I know quite a few of them, and you feel like you know them because, you know, they pop up every few years and you read their stuff and you get a sense of their personality. And Tim's been the host for that because, you know, he's the one who chooses what goes in. And so it's sad to see the almanac go away, but really, as he says, it was his, you know, to birth and his to bury, because it's his personality. And there's really nobody else in the state that I could think of that could take over the almanac and have it still be the same as we remember it. It would be different.
Well, and it seems to me that I've seen a lot of blogs, a lot of websites, zines, things like that come and go over the years in Iowa. People, there's such a rich literary community in the state, people trying to tap into that. But none of them have had the staying power of the Wapsipinicon Almanac. Why do you think that this has had such a reach and such a staying power, in spite of the fact that, again, it's not online? It doesn't have that kind of amplification.
Right, and if it had been online, it would have been something different. You know, the online things are ephemeral. They come and go, and there's no great investment. You know, and Tim's, because of it, it's each issue isn't just the literature that in it. It's also a work of art, and it's you know, Tim's blood's all over it, and his sweat. I think people appreciate that, and it's interesting to look at, to hold in your hand. It's comfortable. It feels like home. There's nothing pretentious about it. It's very Iowan in that nature, that it's a quiet, you know, very pragmatic sort of publication.
Well, and Tim, when I think about the staying power of the almanac, I mean, it's all about you and you not giving up on it through the years. Were there other times? I mean, there were years you didn't publish. Were there times when you thought about giving it up?
Oh, it crossed my mind. But kept it rolling. I've got to mention that if folks want to read a really fun, entertaining, insightful collection of short stories, they should pick up Harley's book called Possum Trot that was published by the Ice Cube Press. It's really a wonderful collection of short stories.
Absolutely.
And the title story was in the Wapsipinicon Almanac first.
So you gave him his launch, really.
Well, thank you.
So as we have about 45 seconds here, Tim, what do you think about your legacy? What do you think you're leaving behind as you stop this publication?
I will know more in 10 years. I'm too close to it now. It's hard to comment on that. I know there'll be a lot of them around sitting somewhere. And I hope some young person 50 years from now picks one up and says, hey, maybe that's what was going on when my parents were born or something. So we'll hope for the best.
Do you think there are a lot of people out there with the full collection?
Some, sure. Yeah.
Are people trying to get in touch with you? And Will raised his hand. He's got a full collection. But are people trying to get in touch with you and say, hey, wait, I'm missing number 14?
Yeah, I hear that all the time. I should throw out a compliment to some of the writers and artists I've had over the years who are no longer with us. When you do something like this for 30 years, you're bound to lose a few.
Yeah. Well, they're left a little bit behind. But Tim Fay, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And J. Harley McElrath, thank you.
Thank you, Charity. Thanks, Tim.
We've been talking about the final edition of the Wapsipinicon Almanac, issue number 25, and they'll be reading at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City tomorrow night at 7 p.m. This is Talk of Iowa.